afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Friday, September 14th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Melody, TGIF in TMA in the Mid-Atlantic.
Oh, yes. Lots going on. I was watching a little bit of the news, and I guess now they've had three deaths associated with this hurricane, Flo, and it's still going on strong. So thoughts and prayers. And Wendy Wilson, we have to remember her. I got a text from her right before the program, and no rain yet, but their winds are beginning to pick up. So she still has power. So she sent me her article for our newsletter, so we'll make sure we get that published for Monday.
Oh, good.
And so everyone out there, we have lots of, I guess, New Bern is, I guess that's North Carolina, New
yes.
Bern.
Yeah.
It got is the one that got hammered the most, even though that's not where the eye wall was, but where it made landfall. But I believe, from what I understand, had the biggest surge, 10, 12 feet or something like that. I can't imagine. But the one website that I go to, Dave, it just, you know, I just don't know. I get it. I understand. But there's this big old picture of the rain coming down, and it's Drudge Report. You go there, and there's this little old German Shepherd sitting in the middle of the street. And I was just listening to a report where they rescued two dogs, and it's just like, oh, those poor things, not knowing what's going on. And yes, it's just disturbing. It's disturbing. But anyway, how people could just tie up their animals. And there was one family who actually stayed behind. He says, well, we got four dogs and two cats, and we're not going anywhere. He says, you can't take them anywhere, and we're not going to leave them behind. So, you know, they risked their lives to stay with their animals. So kudos to them. And they did have a rough time. They had to end up going up on the second story and of their house. And so it became a little bit hairy for them. But kudos for them for taking a responsibility. And
indeed,
can't say that for gold today. No responsibility there at all. We've got gold pressure on gold once again today, down 740 at 1194.50. Don't we have the I don't know if the Fed meets next week or the following week,
25th and 26th.
Yeah, so it's a little early to have a little bit of impact on gold. But there's other things out there that are brewing. Silver was down 10 cents today at $14.15. Buying has been very strong in both the gold and silver. So everybody, and particularly silver, because of these low, low prices. So it is a great time to be buying. And there's no shortages, ladies and gentlemen, as of today. And of course, with the increase in buying, it can always create a shortage. But there is no shortage of silver today. So platinum was down $7 today at $799. Palladium was down $3 at $985. The USDX today, of course, is stronger, up 0.38 at 94.93. Crude oil was up 0.36 at 68.95. And the paper markets today probably are positive. Well,
it's mixed.
It's mixed. No big jumps. The Dow was up 8 points at 26,154. The NASDAQ was down 3 at 8,010. And the S&P was basically, 0.80 at 2,904. 2,904, but it's interesting, they all kept their record range. The Dow is above 26, the NASDAQ above 8, and the S&P above 29. So I don't know what that means, but it's just kind of interesting. 10-year yield, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. It's just creeping up, 2.99% today. I think it was at 3 earlier today. Euro, of course, was weaker, 1.16. All European Asian markets were stronger overnight. There's no fear in the markets anymore. We're all getting a little bit greedy right now. And of course, we're going to talk about these issues here in just a little bit. And there's a lot of, we're first going to talk about the, let me get back to my, the 10-year treasuries that we have, that I mentioned, where it topped 3% today. And this is the first time since August 2nd. And, you know, these yields have been steadily rising since the start of September. And, of course, as we see the expectations for the economy continue to creep, the growth continue to creep higher. And the Commerce Department said today that retail sales edged up 0.1% last month. And this is the smallest rise since February. But then July's figures were also revised a little bit higher to show sales rising 0.7% instead of the 0.5%. Consumer spending accounts for more than two-thirds, as we know of this, as the U.S. economic output. And, of course, everyone sort of looks to this as a forward-looking measure for the GDP.
Yeah, Melody, you know, after rising slightly about 3% early this morning, the benchmark 10-year Treasury rate corrected just a little bit to 2.996 and just slightly finished slightly lower than that. The yield in the 30-year Treasury bond was up at 3.13. As most listeners know, bond yields move opposite of their prices. Now, a preliminary look at a University of Michigan report on September consumer sentiment showed that Americans do remain optimistic on employment and wages. You know, the university said sentiment hit 100.8 in September, up from 96.2 in August, the second highest level of the year, and the second strongest, actually, in 14 years. Richard Curtin, who's chief economist for that survey, said that consumers anticipate a continued growth in the economy that would produce more jobs and an even lower unemployment rate during the year ahead. We shall see.
Yeah, well, I think the listeners know where we fall on all these reports, and you know, I think we got some, you know, we talk about rough waters to the south of the shoreline here, but I think we're going to have some very rough waters here. And we got a lot of reports talking today about, you know, more and more predictions, and everybody's just turning a blind eye to the truth. The CPI came out today that rose 0.2% in August from the prior month. This was released yesterday from the Labor Department. And hey, you know, if you eliminate the food and energy components, prices only increased 0.1%. So, and they both fell short of the economists' expectations. But we all know food and energy prices are high. You know, it's like, who do they think they're really kidding? But no one seems to really care. Yeah, and I think that's what's so dangerous. Nobody seems to care, Dave.
Yeah, it's not even, I'm not even sure denial is the right word for, you know, how at least the mainstream, you know, economists and media treat this paradox. It's bizarre. Ignoring the reality, but it's so curious. It's, you know, something that makes you shake your head at and say, "What?"
Well, you know, I'm not a fan of
the Fed.
Oh, I guess I don't have. I'm not a fan of anybody except Andre Bocelli, and I'm probably his biggest fan.
and our loyal customers.
Yes, and our loyal customers, absolutely. But anything coming out of D.C., Wall Street, and so forth, and media, mainstream media, of course not. But I saw a quote here on Warren Buffett. And I talked to him just about earlier this week about, you know, he was talking about dominoes. And I'll have to look up to see. He came out with a quote, and he was talking about bubbles. He was just talking about, it's just like when, you know, we're going into a bubble because people, I'll have to look for the quote. Maybe I'll look for it at the quote. But he's talking about your dumb neighbors are making more money than you. Then, you know, we're in a bubble. And I thought it was funny.
No kidding. Yeah, I think if and when we ever take this show to video, Melody, our first show, maybe even our lead into every show, is going to have to be just a raining of bubbles. because that's what investing these days seems to be all about.
And we can't even use that song, Tiny Bubbles. These are not tiny bubbles. You know, these are huge.
Huge.
And we're going to talk about some of that, but let's get back to the, where was I? Retail sales.
Yes.
And they recorded their smallest gains in 6 months. Now, we're just talking about the great optimism that we're having, confidence. Because of our consumer economy that we have and how important it is, and yet for the retail sales recorded their smallest gain in 6 months. Just doesn't add up, does it, ladies and gentlemen? And we have consumers that are cutting back on purchases on both motor vehicles and clothing. The Commerce Department said this morning that retail sales edged up 0.1% last month, the smallest since February, which is interesting because you're back to school clothing shopping.
I was thinking the exact same thing. It'll be interesting to see if September is much different for that very reason.
Yeah. So the modest increase in retail sales, of course, suggests that maybe the high gasoline prices could be pulling spending away from other categories, perhaps. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast retail sales increasing 0.4% in August.
Well, you know, sales in August did grow, at a rate of 6.6% higher than a year ago, excluding automobiles and gas, building materials, and food service. Retail sales nudged up 0.1% last month after an upwardly revised 0.8% jump in July. These so-called core retail sales correspond most closely with the consumer spending component of GDP. And despite the surprise slowdown in core retail sales in August, consumer spending remains supported by a tightening labor market, which reportedly is steadily pushing up wages. Annual wage growth increased at its fastest pace in more than 9 years in August, and there were a record almost 7 million job openings in July. Spending is also being underpinned, at least temporarily, by last December's tax cuts.
Well, you know, the autos fell about 0.8% in August. Sales or clothing stores fell 1.7%. That's the biggest drop since February 2017. Let's see what else. That followed a 2.2% increase in July, though. But you have online and mail order retail sales rose 0.7% after accelerating. So you have Americans, of course, eating. They're going to spend more at restaurants and bars. Furniture sales fell a little bit. But while we're talking about retail sales, now I hope I can find this one article that I have, and it's about Sears, because we talk about all the stores that Sears is closing, and they've been around for so long and so forth. And it was an interesting report by it came out today, and it's pretty much what's to blame. Everybody blames the online. They can't compete. They didn't convert. You can blame bad management. But how about just their pension plan? Yesterday, they turned in another bleak quarterly report yesterday, and the CEO and primary shareholder, Eddie Lampert, says, well, maybe there's another reason. He says, Sears has paid almost $2 billion into pension plans in the past 5 years and $4.5 billion since Sears and Kmart merged in 2005. The company pays retirees about $300 million a year. And, he thinks if that money could be reinvested, maybe they wouldn't have the problem. With America's increasing preference to buy online and at big box stores rather than malls, that is a little bit of a major problem for the company, and they have lost $11.7 billion since its last profitable year in 2012. And he says that the company is a little bit at a disadvantage because it once had traditional pension plans, and it was fixed, which pay a fixed monthly benefit to retirees as long as they live. But today, businesses offer what's known as defined contribution plans, such as 401ks. And, you know, Sears did end their plans in 2006. Did you know that Sears, I didn't know this little tidbit, but Sears was the nation's largest employer?
It doesn't surprise me. Certainly back in its heydays.
Yeah, but when they were, you'd think that the Bethlehem Steels at that same point in time, I just didn't think. Yeah, they had 100, they have an estimated 100,000 retirees still eligible for benefits under the pension plans. And so again, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens. You know, Sears is ready to go bankrupt. They are bankrupt. They're selling off their divisions. They sold Craftsman's Tools to Black & Decker. They're trying to unload its Kenmore appliance brand as well. And because of their pension plans under these settlements with the PBGC, they're guaranteed to contribute some of that money into its plans. So, but one day, I have no doubt Sears is not going to be here. So what's going to happen to all those pension plans? So,
well, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation will pay that. They'll enter into an agreement with Sears or with the bankruptcy judge, and then probably agree to pay, a small percentage on the dollar to those former employees who've been receiving their defined benefit pensions.
Very small, because the PBGC doesn't have any money either to pay all these, if they got hit all at once, they don't have the money. So
that's why it could be pennies on the dollar.
Yep, absolutely. So, and that's just one example, Dave, of, the various plans around this country that are so underfunded and companies aren't doing well. Someone's going to have to pay. Somebody's going to have to give up something.
I suspect it will largely be the retirees, the benefit recipients. They're the ones who will lose the most out of anybody. Because one, the company will no longer be in existence. Two, they'll have negotiated a pennies on the dollar settlement to continue paying their employers. And, the federal government can walk away as well.
Yeah. And we're going to walk away just a little bit for
not
two
long.
Or 3 minutes. Not long. Not long, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, and of course sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can listen to these programs live at 4 p.m. Eastern time right from the website, or you can pull up the archives. They're there daily, and long term, you can go back years if you want. So, and see what we're saying different. Wouldn't that be exciting? I don't know if we have any of old Bob Chapman's programs listed from that site. I don't know if the news site was still there. You'd have to go all the way back to the beginning. I'm not quite sure, but
June of 2012 is when he passed away.
Let's see. Let's go ahead and continue on. We have, and I did find Warren Buffett on why bubbles happen. And again, I don't agree with, I don't think much of Warren Buffett, but, we did have one thing in common. That was the Domino's quote.
Yeah. And bubbles happen because the economy has gas.
No. Now he says people see neighbors dumber than they are getting rich. He was interviewed by CNBC's Andrew Ross Sorkin, and he was asked if he was worried another financial crisis is going to happen. He says there's going to be one sometime. He says people start being interested in something because it's going up, not because they understand it or anything else. And he often says that human behavior, and this is what they bet on, ladies and gentlemen. They know what the human behavior is. They know how to get your money from you. He says a human behavior and jealousy that leads to crises will forever be a part of the financial system. And, of course, they're all talking about this because this week did mark the 10th anniversary of Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. And everybody believes that was, the major event heading into the financial crisis. And they actually collapsed. Lehman Brothers actually collapsed on September 15th, which is tomorrow. And, of course, Berkshire Hathaway took advantage of the financial meltdown. They made big investments in Goldman Sachs, General Electric. General Electric's not doing that well. Bank of America, they were there for them with their pocketbooks open. And that's what gold will do for you, too. When you have these crises and everything corrects to the downside, you preserve your purchasing power so you can go in there and buy it when everybody else has lost theirs. And, Dave, I've heard multiple times this week, financial planners, keep your money in there. It always comes back. You're not going to lose anything. Just stay in there. You don't want to sell. And that's really the wrong advice. I mean, you're supposed to buy low, sell high. Paper markets are at an all-time high. So why wouldn't you sell? Go into something that preserves your purchasing power, like gold, which is at a low, not an all-time low, but a low. You let the paper market drop. Your gold prices go higher. You can go back into the paper market and multiply your original holdings because you protected your purchasing power instead of holding on to it, watching it drop. Hopefully it makes its way back. And what do you have if it does make its way back? The same thing that you had. You didn't increase your holdings on anything. You just kept what you had. That's when an investment is increasing what you have, not just holding it. We tell you to hold gold. Yes, you hold gold for when you have the it doesn't even have to be a collapse, but the pullbacks in the markets. And we know, because we have a fiat system, we know what happens. We know the amount of debt that our government is bankrupt. We're just talking about Sears being bankrupt, where our government is bankrupt. We're going to see the same thing with our government as we see with Sears, Illinois, California, Pennsylvania. I mean, how many other ones do I have to list? So again,
oh, go ahead. Because there's certainly more out there.
There certainly are, and we only have a half hour, so and I would probably be here a little bit longer. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting what Warren Buffett says. You know, people see neighbors dumber than they are getting rich.
That's classic. Well, so, that's human instinct in some respects.
And I think that's we're beyond that. So we are in the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Bubbles break. So give us a call, 800-375-4188. So, and there was actually another one. I don't mean to go off on different things today, but there was another one that was yesterday. We talk about Gordon Brown, and then there was another one today who's, again, warning us that the collapses, that a huge correction, and nobody's paying attention. So in the meantime, you know, people might pay attention. We have the import prices. Note the biggest drop in over a year. U.S. import prices recorded the biggest drop in more than 1.5 years in August. And, of course, amid declines in the cost of fuels and a range of other goods, suggesting a strong dollar was curbing imported inflation pressures. This was also said by the Labor Department this morning. Import prices fell 0.6% last month, and that was the largest decline since January of 2016. So, I mean, this just continues to go on, and, you know, we're not quite sure how these prices for goods imported from China slipped 0.1% in August for a second straight month. And yesterday, President Trump insisted that he was under no pressure to make a deal with China, signaling a readiness to escalate the trade war with Beijing. He says they are under pressure to make a deal with us. He tweeted in reference to China, our markets are surging, theirs are collapsing. The president's statement sought to downplay any hopes that the U.S. would extend a hand toward reconciling the trade conflict amid word that the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin had invited Chinese officials to return to talks. So Trump's view that the Chinese are suffering while the U.S. thrives helps explain his confidence that Beijing ultimately will buckle. Well, I'm going to go back to one thing. You know, is it the economy? Is it the economy that's surging? Or is it the markets? Is it the Dow? Is it the S&P? Two different things, ladies and gentlemen. And Dave, I talked to he's a mechanic this morning. He's been doing it for 37 years. And he says this is the slowest he's been since the recession of 2008. He says, so he doesn't understand why he's being told that things are booming out there. He says he's not feeling it.
We have a close friend of the family who's also an auto mechanic who says that their business is the slowest it's been in, I think he said, 5 years. He said, you know, he and his boss, who owns the company, just keep scratching their heads and asking, where is everybody? Well, apparently, I mean, you know, there could be going somewhere else, of course, but it sounds like there's a trend there. They just believe that people are deferring maintenance on their vehicles because of the uncertainty that's out there, that, you know, they might need something replaced. It's not, you know, obviously nothing major that would, you know, threaten them or their families while they're on the road, but, you know, replacement of an oil filter, you know, getting your oil changed once a year instead of every 6 months or whatever, things like that. So there is this widespread sense of uneasiness and uncertainty, and as we've reported, what happens on Wall Street does not necessarily translate into good things for Main Street, and in terms of the unequal distribution of the largesse of the stock market gains, for example, I think are reflected in anecdotes that you, Melody, and that you know we're hearing from this friend.
And it's not like you can say, well, everybody's buying new cars and so they don't need to use, you know, yours was a auto mechanic, mine was a different type of a mechanic, and so you can't even, because we see auto sales decline. So, right. The numbers aren't jiving, the reports aren't jiving, and with what's really going on out there. But how much did the Shanghai Composite drop this year so far, Dave?
Well, you know, it's down almost 25%. You know, and that makes it the world's worst performing major exchange in 2018. But big difference, Melody. You know, unlike in the U.S., the ups and downs of the Chinese stock market affect relatively few people. I mean, that means, you know, sell-offs there are unlikely to translate into pressure on Chinese leaders to do something. Here we've got, literally millions of people who have 401ks. You know, that might vary in value from $1,000 to maybe one or two million for older folks who've been in it for a while. But you know, less than 10% of China's adult population reportedly own shares on the Chinese exchange. In the U.S., that figure is more than 50%. You know, and additionally, Chinese share prices move with little regard for what's happening in their real economy. In 2008, for example, stocks fell by more than 65%, even as their economy grew by almost 10%. You know, likewise, any, you know, wobble in the Chinese economy thus far has been modest. I mean, you know, though China has slowed from its double-digit growth rates that it recorded earlier this decade, you know, its economy still grew by an annual rate of 6.7% in the second quarter of this year. You know, our president has imposed tariffs on $50 billion worth of Chinese imports, mostly industrial goods so far, says that he's thinking seriously about, you know, another $200 billion. You know, the Chinese government, you know, as we keep saying, and as everyone knows, they've retaliated with equivalent tariffs, targeting mainly agricultural products. And largely in politically sensitive states ahead of the midterm congressional elections this November. So, you know, it's sort of an apples to oranges comparison, but I think it illuminates how China might be a little more resistant to a trade war than perhaps we are, Melody, here in the States.
Well, you know, yesterday the largest U.S. business groups in China had pleaded with the president to impose a ceasefire. Nearly two-thirds of more than 430 U.S. companies in China, and you know, I don't. You know, what I say to them, bring your companies back to the United States. Okay. You know, that's what we want. You know, so instead of having all your manufacturing done in China, I say to these 430 U.S. companies, I was president, I'm just keep doing what I'm going to do. And but unfortunately, it's going to, if you're going to talk about anything trickling down, it's going to be the costs trickling down to the consumer, you know, if that was done, and even with these tariffs. So I I just can't see these 430 U.S. companies crying, you know, to the administration, you know, we're getting hurt and so forth. Well, you know what? Step up to the pump, deal with it, and move on. You know, they got the tax cut breaks. So what are they crying about? These multinational corporations got the tax cuts. You know, how much of their money did they repatriate back yet? And now they're crying because of a few of the tariffs that have been on is hurting them? Yeah, please. Anyway, that's the way I see it. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I think I'm right.
Methinks they've got a credibility problem.
You know, good you know, grief.
Be careful what you ask for. I mean, obviously, they were opportunistic. They saw tremendous growth opportunity for their company and shareholders.
Shareholders.
Sure. Be able to move to a country where they can pay pennies on the dollar for employees that work for them, you know, particularly at the lower levels of the hierarchy. So, you know, I agree with you on this one. I think, you know, it's disingenuous, I think, at best, for them to be crying foul.
You know what? It's also about giving back. And if some of these multinational corporations actually gave back to the United States, it'd be different. But they haven't. You know, I can remember there was a survey back in the 90s, and this is when we really started to become globalized and so forth. And I remember a lot of these, like Target and these big stores, were asked if any of them actually, you know, and that was even, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. When you'd have major meetings where you actually said the Pledge of Allegiance.
And that's right, indeed.
I mean, was it that long now? And that's what these big CEOs were asked. When you have these meetings, your U.S. companies, do you say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? Oh, no, we don't want to offend our business partners and our, you know, we don't do. And I think it was Target was the only one that did at that time. There was one out of like 20 that said, no, we don't, you know, we don't want to offend our business partners, so, and our shareholders, so no.
Well, they engage in the art of hypocrisy.
Yes.
Is what they do, I believe.
Well, we're just about out of this segment, and what else are we going to, anything else about these tariffs? Doesn't look like we're going to be taking a short break here, ladies and gentlemen. 1-800-375-4188. We're going to talk about the budget deficit as it approaches the $1 trillion mark when we come back from the break. And I also have something here. I saw where what Jeff Bezos spending $2 billion would feel like to the average American.
Yes. And, speaking of giving back.
It's giving back. And, you know, his yacht, the world's most expensive yacht, $400 million was his actual cost. And what it feels like for Bezos, it feels like our $237.
Not too chintzy.
But these billionaires are supposed to understand what it's like to be us and so forth. Anyway,
they have no clue.
They don't have a clue. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, because I do think I have a clue. We're heading into a commercial or to a break. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Each and
every heart is food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. Well, before we continue with Bezos, but you know what? He was one of these that did the – I can remember him being every day on CNBC. They were all in it together to grow him, and it's just – he didn't do it on his own. If he didn't have CNBC and the rest of the financial news programs that were touting him 24/7, he wouldn't be where he is today. I mean, he's not dumb, but I mean, he's had a lot of help. And we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But we're going to talk about the budget deficit. You did a blog today, and it's going to be released later on this afternoon about the federal government's fiscal year 2018 ends in a little more than 2 weeks, and that the annual budget deficit is going to close in on an unprecedented $1 trillion. The deficit grew by $222 billion as of August 31st from the same time last year, reaching, as many have expected, a total of $895 billion so far. And this is according to the Congressional Budget Office. How does this happen?
Well, it's actually
print.
It's actually quite simple, as it turns out. You know, this significant increase that you just talked about was largely the result of the tax cuts enacted last December, followed by Congress's subsequent decision to drastically increase spending, which grew by, or I should say, has grown by 7% so far through 11 months of the fiscal year, compared to revenue growth of just 1%. Increased spending 7%, decreased revenue 1%. Yeah, it's pretty predictable, the results, if you ask me, Melody.
You know, at the end of the second quarter this year, the portion of our national debt that was held by public was a little over $15 trillion, with 76% of the GDP, $20 trillion. So we're looking at an astounding 55 times the roughly $281 billion of debt as of 1970. Or 54, yeah. Or 5,400%.
Percent here, percent there, right?
What?
I'm sorry. It's sad.
Bada bing, bada boom.
I know. Sad but true. Total gross national debt, which we talk a lot about, was $21.2 trillion as of the end of the second quarter. It's now close to $21.5. Now, the difference between that gross debt and debt held by the public, the $15.5 trillion, is $5.7 trillion. And that represents basically the debt that's invested by the Treasury Department on behalf of federal government agencies like, you know, the Social Security Trust Fund, Medicare Trust Fund, and a couple of dozen other federal agency funds. So, you know, obviously the largest of those agency funds is the Social Security Old Age and Survivors Insurance Trust Fund at $2.8 trillion. That represents about 50% of all of that those agency funds, Melody.
And you still got to remember that this isn't, all of our liabilities. I mean, some of those liabilities, future liabilities, are anywhere from $80 trillion to $200-plus trillion from the CBO.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. So, you know, and this is the 21 trillion that they tell us about.
Yeah, that's right.
Forget about the ones that's all off budget and the ones that we don't, all the trillions of dollars that we don't know. But you go on to say that in April, the CBO projected that if no further legislative changes are made, based on its current economic and technical assumptions, our debt's going to balloon by another $5.6 trillion over the next 5 years. And we all know that's, you know, that $5.6 trillion will probably be more like, you know, $10 trillion because they're always under, you know, they always underreport the numbers. And in the next 10 years, $12.4 trillion, you know, that's probably going to be $15-plus trillion over the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's like hold on to your pocketbook time, ladies and gentlemen. And more importantly, tell your children to hold on to theirs too, because if past is prologue, things are likely to get worse, possibly, probably a lot worse before they get better. You know, and Monday's tax proposal from the House leaders doubles down on the fundamental flaws of the 2017 tax law by further expanding deficit and once again favoring people with the highest incomes. You know, these proposals call for making permanent last year's law's individual tax provisions. And those provisions, as we now know, benefit households in the top 1% twice as much as households in the bottom 60, you know, at least as measured as a share of income. You know, making those provisions permanent would cost almost $650 billion over the next 10 years. That's according to Congress's Joint Tax Committee. Now, as large as that sounds, that estimate significantly understates the long-term cost, because the bill largely affects only the final 3 years of that 2019 to 2028 budget window. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, Melody, estimates that the proposed legislation would cost roughly another $2.9 trillion from 2026 to 2035. And that's the first full decade it would be in effect, just as you said, Melody, you know, that that $5.6 trillion over the next 5 years, the $12.4 over the next 10, based on current policy. Well, here's three more to add to that. You know, and that additional loss comes at a time when baby boomers are retiring in large numbers and moving into old age, meaning 80 and above. You know, that's certainly going to add additional pressures on Medicare and Social Security costs. You know, indeed, you know, 2026, the year when most of the proposed tax legislation would start having effect. This is the proposed, again, legislation. That's the first year where all members of the baby boom generation, including the youngest, will be eligible to draw Social Security retirement benefits. Melody.
Well, you know, we get these reports that the recent economic news is good, and economists, and in your note, you claim that growth is the key to fiscal sustainability. I think it is too. If you don't have the debt, then you have the truth about the economies. But this is, and that's what we're being told all the time, that we're going to grow ourselves out of our problem. I don't think we can.
Well, you know, the question is it too late?
It is.
And in reality, it almost certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, in theory, and again, in theory, a reversal or stemming this systemic, you know, rise to above the clouds, you know, can I guess be put on hold, meaning, you know, with serious, And by serious, I mean actual action that can't be reversed, that it assumes, I think, more than anything, that you're going to have disciplined elected leaders in Congress that aren't going to want to undo, the kind of legislation that, you know, if not makes it actually better, can at least prevent it from getting too much worse. Now, again, when you're talking about the numbers that we're at, some people, throw their hands up in the air and say, well, trillion, you know, even a trillion here, a trillion there, you know. Why worried? Why get all bent out of shape about it? Well, you hear that, and you respect that, and you understand where that frustration's coming from. You know, on the other hand, there's still a lot at stake. You know, if not for us, it may be too late for our generation, it may even be too late for our kids' generation. But we have their kids, and they have their kids to think about. So I don't think this is all for naught. But again, you know, is it pie in the sky? You know, is it doable? Yes. Is it pie in the sky? Well, it is. It has been. You know, economists of all political persuasions agree that consistently strong economic growth is an important ingredient in putting our crazy debt on a more sustainable course. You know, that's going to take a lot of pain. Cutbacks in spending.
Yeah, and that's just it, Dave, though. They can't do that, though.
Increases in taxes. And you've got constituencies in our country, particularly the way our federal politics are set up right now, that it's, you know, if you don't think it's impossible, boy, I'd like to see you lead this effort then, because, you know, if we're ever in need or looking for a hero, you could be it, ladies and gentlemen. You could be the savior of the quality of life for future generations if you can lead the way to what needs to be done. So.
And you know what, and it's different, and that's why I believe, because I don't think there is anyone that knows what needs to be done to fix the problems that we have. So they're just going to keep making it worse and worse and worse. They had the opportunity in the crisis of 2008, if they would have left things and corrected the mistakes and kept, but you got bankers in charge, you got Wall Street in charge, you got corruption in government. And until all that's changed, I don't care if we have 30% GDP. It's not going to grow us out of our problem. They're already have record tax revenues coming in, and we're still short. They can't get enough tax revenues. They've given these tax cuts that's helped, so they get more and more record tax revenues. But good Lord, what's wrong with that picture? How big does these tax revenues have to get? It's the American people don't have it. This country is bankrupt. And they're just throwing, it's not even good money because it's fiat money, but they're just throwing money down the rat hole. Because how can they fix things? They can keep putting band-aids on things. They can keep telling us how great things in, so we can get this, you know, confidence going, and you know, everybody feels good. But yet you have mechanics, and I'm not saying even in great economy, in good economies, if things are managed properly, that everyone is going to feel the boom. You know, I do believe there's always will be segments of populations and segments of, you know, economies and housing, and so that'll be not get part of the cookie, so to speak. You know, they might just get the crumbs, but you know, and we pick them out and so forth. But until they fix our money, I just don't see how they can fix anything. You know, and I don't care how strong they make this economy grow. And you're right, they have to cut back. But what are they going to cut back? It's going to be so painful for so many. Who knows what would happen after that? You know, how are people going to react when their funding stops?
Well, if you think there's greater social unrest now than there has been in 50 years, wait till something like this gets put into effect. Now, you know, if there's, you know, some kind of, again, I don't know how you achieve a national consensus on something like that, because someone is always going to want more, and unfortunately, you know, I guess I've become, I hate to think that I've become cynical in my early senior years, Melody, but
I am, and I'm proud of it.
it strikes me that there will always be a puppet master, whether, you know, under our current system of fiat currency, it's the bankers, it's the Wall Streets that are pulling the strings of our decision makers. And in fact, many of our decision makers, our elected leaders at the federal level anyway, particularly at the Senate, are very part of that system.
Absolutely.
So in any event, ladies and gentlemen, you know, this article talks about a couple of specific ideas and throws out a couple of numbers. View them skeptically, view them critically. But if you got a rainy weekend upon you, you know, take a read at the blog, which will come out this evening.
I think it's a great article.
Well, let us know.
Because it should make people think. And that's what it's all about. Making you think. Making the readers think, because you don't anymore, so many articles that are written and published and so forth, they just feed into what you already No, and this I thought it was a great article, Dave. So I do encourage the listeners to sign up and at the website dgscoins.com and get it.
Indeed. Let me end with this, because I think we're just about out of time. The one thing that struck me more than anything, I think, was to get there, even to just keep our debt at 100% of GDP in 25 years, we're going to have to be spending close to $700 plus billion each and every year.
Well, that's a number worth repeating on Monday. So keep that in front of you, and we'll talk about that when we come back on Monday. I want to wish everyone a safe weekend, particularly those that are in impacts from Hurricane Florence. So until then, be safe. Good night, and God bless. Thank you.
Stay dry. Bye-bye. Bye.